This is the Back Porch Education Podcast. Today on the show, Steve and I discuss screens, how to use them, how not to use them. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Did you ever play outside when you were a kid,
Steve? Just occasionally.
Okay. The occasion was if it was day.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Or if my mother had said, you cannot come in until dinner.
Right. Very good.
I get the feeling that the question's leading up to a poem.
It absolutely is. But first, let me notice this. That I remember one of the things about my childhood was that it was perhaps not intimately, but I would say quite connected to the seasons, right?
Okay.
That summer felt very long, and the days felt very long. Uh-huh. Winter felt also very long, but that.
Well, but
because
it was
the day
long,
was so short.
Right, you were stuck inside.
Exactly.
With a lot fewer options than perhaps the current child faces when they're inside.
Yeah. Exactly. No doubt.
My television had two channels.
Oh, nice. My television had two dials. Funk,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I was the remote control.
That's funny.
Son, get up and change the channel.
Right.
And I didn't have to ask to what, because it was the other channel.
Change it. Yeah.
No, go back.
Right. That's funny.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, you would need a master's degree to work the remote now.
Well, the amazing thing is, we were the generation of the TV dinner, which was this fascinating experience in foil dining.
Yeah.
And this is what we're eating in front. We're taking little tables out into the living room.
Yeah.
And setting up chairs and eating in front of one of two choices. One of which probably included a sitcom that nobody would abide today.
That's funny. Okay. Well, so
We preferred the outdoors.
No doubt. And we're not, this podcast is decidedly not going to be a release your kids into the wild, screens are evil sort of conversation, right?
That's for a different time.
That is every other show.
Yeah. No, but when I say it's for another time, I mean that. I think someone who would try and make that show today would face the consequences.
Yeah.
Screens are here.
That's right. Here they are. And that said, maybe that's enough preamble as to why I would like to recite this poem by Robert Louis Stevenson.
Hey!
Oh, yeah. Entitled Bed in Summer.
Okay.
In winter, I get up at night and dress by yellow candlelight. In summer, quite the other way. I have to go to bed by day. I have to go to bed and see the birds still hopping on the tree, or hear the grown-up people's feet still going past me in the street. And does it not seem hard to you, when all the sky is clear and blue, and I should like so much to play, to have to go to bed by day? It's tough.
Well, so I think some would say it's childish.
No doubt.
But except you be as one of these little ones.
That's right. Yeah. I like the poem because it's short. I like it because it is, I think, pretty funny. But I also like the poem because Stevenson here, in my estimation, pretty clearly articulates that feeling that, if we're being honest, we still feel as adults, but less often and less sharply, right? I mean, was there any burden or was there any sort of pronouncement as intolerable than going to bed early? I mean, it was just sort of against custom and justice, right?
Yep. Which led to rebellion.
Yeah.
Here's where I'd like to start it.
Yeah.
I'm in my 30th year of teaching.
Okay.
About 5 years ago, it was announced to us that starting next week, every student and every teacher in the school I was teaching at would come into the possession of a, and this is in the middle of the school year,
yeah,
would be given an iPad.
Mm.
And that to make this a complete experience, a 60-inch monitor would be installed in each classroom.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying that I was a Luddite prior to this experience. I had for many
years. But you are now.
Yeah, no, I was on my way towards such. That might have helped.
It was a goal of mine.
I had interacted with and used computer screens to my advantage in my own preparation, in my own study, typing up tests, doing research on the internet, so on, for many years prior to that.
Right.
But this was an epic shift for me, because now it wasn't a, I wonder if there's a way to use computers more effectively in the classroom. It was now, you must learn.
Wow.
Right? Almost overnight, there was not a screen, but a multiplicity of screens and all of that. Because we had the internet hookup and so on and so forth. And that's made me think deeply. That's probably what's led me to being interested in us talking about this today.
Right.
Because the old dog, new trick thing isn't even necessarily the best way to approach this.
Yeah.
This was such a move that I had the choice of either fighting it or joining it.
Yeah.
And yet it's been fascinating to me to note the benefits, and I hope we can talk about some of them today.
Yeah.
But the realization that it isn't this magic wand.
Right.
That I was told as a justification for this move that X, Y, and Z would just fall into place in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, was asking about A, B, and C, the horrors that I had heard.
Yeah.
But it's been fiddling around with the G, H, and I, the unexpected stuff that has provided to me the interesting the conversation about screens in the classroom. I'm probably not as prepared to talk about screen addiction or
brain chemistry, synapses firing, and
where the real conversation's happening at the present moment about screens is their physiological effect upon the human mind, and in particular upon the forming human mind, the child's mind, and that's a great conversation that I don't wish to have today.
Exactly, no doubt, stuff happens there. We're not qualified,
I have opinions.
Okay, I'm not qualified. Yeah, certainly.
I'm not qualified in some medical sense or psychological sense.
Right.
I do have a lot of experience now, 5 years later, of watching this happen in the classroom. I think my teaching experience has perhaps had more of that than yours.
Yeah, oh, for sure, no doubt.
But now I feel like I'm in the place to look at it and go, well, there's some good things that have come from it.
Okay.
And there are some things that we've learned, I hope we've learned, just can't be forced into it.
Okay.
Like the notion that we would go paperless, for instance. I actually embraced that to some extent because I'm the dude that regularly puts a pile of papers down and then spends hours looking where did I put those graded papers. I gotta have those graded papers.
Right.
So it's, to some extent, having it collected for me.
Yeah.
And locked into a place online.
Absolutely.
With the necessary platform for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that I can remember, well, our buddy John and I spent the better part of a school year with him doing most of the heavy lifting. John is a friend of Jason and I's who's in the IT world. He does computers.
Computer stuff, yeah, exactly.
So he knows what he's doing. And he took on the task of trying to find the best school management system available at the time, and he checked out the ones that were $40,000 and the ones that were $40.
Yeah.
And everything in between, and we arrived at the time at something that I think is still in use at that school. If you don't have the platform, if you don't have the code,
yep,
to make it all work, a classroom is a nightmare. But even Google Classroom has come in and really kind of taken the challenge of providing as much as possible a free platform that a teacher can legitimately use to do all the things they need to do that we used to do on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Do it electronically if your kids are properly connected and you've got a few basic, if you're a Google school, so to speak.
Right.
So that's where everything's moving. And mm-hmm. I'm not coming into a podcast going, please, let's not do this.
Yeah.
I'm saying that we're going to do it. Well,
no one cares if you are.
Right.
Right. I mean, frankly, it's happening.
But anything in education that's done sort of either mindlessly or too quickly,
yeah,
is going to have negative as well as positive effects. Mm-hmm. But I have seen a sort of a resurgence in knowing that something's true rather than just taking it from the classroom mindlessly. Right. To put this in the common terms, I get Googled a lot.
Yeah.
Right,
sure.
Right in real time. And, sure. And it's funny. I can tell when I've said something that at least has an alternative view online.
Sure.
I don't know how many times I've been caught in a situation where I'm arguing with the search results.
Yeah.
Well, the internet says, well, right, I disagree with it. I've studied it too.
Right.
Maybe we should, and it usually turns to something like either a virtual whiteboard or a physical whiteboard, where I'm teaching them the necessary skill of seeking more than one search result.
Yeah.
Right? Which we've taught forever in school.
Sure.
Don't be satisfied with one source, but search optimization is an interesting aspect of the internet. People will pay to get their hit at the top of the pile.
Right.
And they may be paying that money, not always because they're the best.
Right.
But they're the wealthiest.
Exactly.
And suddenly you find a bias that with a little bit of digging and a little bit of research into less popular hits, you suddenly find that, well, there's this alternative view that may fit my forming opinion more adequately than just what's popular.
Yeah. If you can even maintain the mental fortitude to dig that deep.
Right.
Right.
The speed is a problem.
Convenience.
Yes.
Right.
The first thing I see.
And the certainty.
Yes.
Right. I guess I'm reminded of Mark Twain's quote about it's not the things that you're uncertain of that get you.
Right.
It's the things that you are certain of but just ain't so.
Yes.
And right. It's like, man, I know that Samuel Clemens lived in a pre-Google world, but wow.
Hmm. I would say
the certainty is sort of built in. It's encouraged.
Context.
Yeah.
His context is the I would call classic age of conversation.
Hmm. Okay.
This is when the front or back porch was a very active place.
Yep. Yep.
Where the general store was the real library or the real center of oral history in the town, and there were constant forums.
Yeah,
it was better than Facebook because you were face to face.
Sure,
but there was a lot of fact checking. There was a lot of calling out. But it was all done personally. So I like the expanded. So I was involved for a while in professional cleaning, and one of my clients hired me. I didn't normally do residential, but they hired me to clean their upstairs apartment. There was an older gentleman, and they said he's really not keeping it up very well. We want to hire you to come in and kind of clean up once a week and keep things good. Well, I engaged him, and he had been at the Battle of the Bulge.
Wow.
So I started chatting with this gentleman.
Sure.
He was in Eddie Arnold's orchestra.
Whoa.
So I start just having these... I'm doing my job. I'm there to do my... But while I'm cleaning...
You're not leaning on the broom.
Hey, Mr. Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I discovered something that shocked me. This is back late 90s.
Okay.
So in ancient times of the internet. Yes. Yeah. Right?
Right, right.
He had been contacted by some, I'm assuming young, fifth grade teacher, who wanted to put her students in touch with as much history as possible. And so she had gone out looking for people who had been... She put this call out, and okay. I don't know the specifics, but she had gathered email addresses for people who had been at mid-20th century events. She had, like he said, he had actually emailed back and forth with somebody who had been in Dallas November 22nd.
Wow.
63?
Yeah.
At the assassination of Kennedy.
Wow.
They didn't actually, they heard the gunshot, but didn't see the...
Right.
But they were close.
Wow.
And so these kids could sit down at the classroom's computer, and they had to submit a draft of their letter.
Sure.
That included questions. And he was the Battle of the Bulge guy.
Wow.
So he would get these questions from all over, because as teachers often do... She had found a way to get it out there to other teachers.
Yeah.
And so it became this thing. And he was like, I'm almost feeling like this is a job. He says, I probably answer 4 or 5 emails a day.
Wow.
Of course, he's retired and
sure.
But still, you know, the notion that you could pull that together using a screen.
Yeah.
Is unthought of prior to that entering into our educational world.
Right.
And now it's that kind of stuff all over the place. COVID, of course, has brought this even to a higher level.
Mm.
But I think COVID's one of the things that has made us kind of go, there are definite good things about screens and about availability and about...
Access. Absolutely. Access.
And safety.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
There's research that can be done online much more safely than if you were...
Yeah.
Heading off into the brave. Right. I mean,
happens when you mix bleach and something?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's watch the YouTube first. And following that, right, there's some really cool things that chemistry teachers are hesitant to do live because of their danger that in the safety of a film, it's not as cool as being there, but it's still cool to watch it go kaboom. So I've mentioned, I think we've discussed two things at once here. One is the reach of the screen.
Right.
And the other is the multiple source. I don't have to limit myself to the books in my presence. I'm actually able to probably curate a larger range of sources.
Yep.
Although there's no getting around the fact that the best information online is still behind a paywall of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
That my students run into this regularly. In fact, I fight hard, you know, for a few of those dollars being given to the athletic department you know, JSTOR or something like that would be very helpful to my students. But it's incredibly expensive because the scholars, the mule should, the ox, I guess is the biblical term, should be allowed to eat the grain that he's treading. So, I think the notion that everything on a screen should be free is not necessarily a true thing.
Right.
But I'd still bet you you could, with a smaller budget, get further into good research online than if you were having forced to find it in book form.
Yeah.
Even with college libraries and whatnot and library sharing and whatnot, it's back to access. It could be done faster.
No doubt it's faster. No doubt. And I think that's right that you can get pretty far. The breadth of sources, I don't know. There's a lot of books in a library. But I agree that you can, well, it's democratizing publication,
yes. Right? Yeah.
The standards for putting your voice out there have dropped.
Yes.
Drastically.
Yep.
Is that good? I'm not actually here to talk about if that's good or not. Right. I'm just noticing what is.
Yeah.
That is the case.
Right. Which is pushing us again into that conversation we had many years ago in publication about censorship and should all information be available or should some of it kind of go through an editorial funneling, filtering. Both sides of that are being well represented in the current conversation.
Yeah. I think what, I don't know, I recall Frost's part of Build Soil where one of them, I can't remember who now, says greed should be taught a little abnegation for bringing change unheralded on the unready.
That's a great line for this.
Yeah, when the change is unheralded, uncalled for, unwanted, on people, when it's brought to them and they are not ready for it, you get some really weird things. Let me pick on probably the easiest thing an English teacher to pick on, and that is research papers.
Yeah.
When you have equipped, when your students are acting or believing that there is still a great barrier to publication, then when they find something that's published, they treat it as an authority. Yes,
right.
And they have not developed the skill of categorizing something as absolute trash.
Yeah.
I'm not saying something's absolute trash because it comes from the internet. I'm saying I know how to tell the difference.
Right, right.
And if my students don't, well, that's not good. Right. They're not going to be sorting gems and trash effectively.
So now you've brought up the thing that we've talked about before. I honestly, at this point, we're, 70 episodes or so into things?
It's getting close.
Have we done a podcast on arts, difference between arts and sciences, or have we just talked about it from time to time? I don't know.
I'm not sure either.
But this is that conversation, because you're talking about an art. You're talking about something that takes time to develop.
Yep.
It takes more than a 5-minute YouTube video on, discerning
how to
sources.
Research. Yeah, yes. Sure.
Right. But there's 100 of them out there.
Sure.
And if a kid's watched one, he's of the most dangerous nature. He thinks he can certainly distinguish.
Absolutely.
And it really can't.
It ain't so.
Right.
In the words of Mark Twain.
That's right. Yeah. And revealed too late. In the final product of a paper that's standing on very thin ice.
Right.
And thus an opinion back behind that that's that's on very thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
There is something about it the instantaneous, as we said, the speed with which it pops up on the screen.
Yeah.
Oh, look, you know, and what the kids call clickbait,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It looks good.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Screens are only as good as those using them. There are skills necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are the same skills as a printed paged book.
Yeah.
The fact that you can pull up more of those in multiple tabs
yep.
doesn't eliminate any of the necessary skills of thought, discernment, judgment, logic, etc.
Dude. Yeah.
It's a means, and many people, I think, are trying to treat it like an end.
Yeah.
If you can just get them on the computer, they'll be ready for the modern world. No, they won't.
Right.
Because there's plenty of people that can
right.
do absolutely nothing for hours
yep.
on the screen.
Okay, so I'm thinking of two things. The first, I've got to get these out quick. The first one is when somebody told, I think, I'm kind of making up the details here, but I'm pretty sure that when someone told Thoreau, hey, guess what, Henry David, I'm sure that's what they all called him.
HD, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, that's Hilda Doolittle.
Oh.
When
they were friends, right?
When they said, hey, Henry, guess what? We strung up a wire, and now a man from Boston can talk to a man in Dallas.
Yes.
His response was, what does he have to say to him?
Right.
Like, who cares? What is that? The other thing is, I found this book at Goodwill a few weeks ago for a dollar, and it's written by a former like hedge fund, or maybe he's a current hedge fund guy.
Yep.
And it's his name is Chris Varelas, and it's entitled How Money Became Dangerous. What he talks about in that book is how it's not the internet, but I guess it would be with electronic trading.
Okay, all right.
Speed became a virtue.
Yeah, you don't have the little dude with the pink slips running around
right,
on the
exactly.
Wall Street floor anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, it's not about, listen, buy GE because that's a good company long term. Ford will never let you down. GMC.
Oh, get on
know,
the ground floor of this
Sears
thing.
And Roebuck.
Right.
Now, he's talking, this was happening in like the 80s, 90s,
yeah.
okay?
And
but
it's
he's
hyper speed.
Now. Oh, absolutely. But what he was saying is it was no long buy and hold Coca-Cola. Will never go wrong. You know, that sort of conventional wisdom fell out of convention because the new virtue was just trade it faster.
Right.
If you can be in and out before all of the fuddy-duddies can be out, then you will make money.
Right.
And I promise this has something to do with what we were just talking about. And it is that idea of speed being a virtue.
Yep.
Right? That
yep.
that we... I'm struck by how my students want to look something up online and they are perhaps a bit, maligned when I want to look it up in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And... they get a little bit out of sorts because they're upset that I am wasting time or that I am taking longer. You can do it faster here.
Right.
Why don't you just do it this way, Jason?
Right. That's the virtue.
Yeah, exactly. Just do it. Look, just Google it.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to take me longer to trust that
mm-hmm.
than this book over here that I've got.
Yeah, I'm settled on its authority.
Exactly.
The hit, I'm going to have to look into it a little bit.
Right.
Now, it's interesting
mm-hmm.
to defend the screen.
Yeah.
That there has been, that you used the term democratization. Once upon a time, there was, I think it was dictionary.com, which I think is still there.
Okay.
But like Google no longer cites it as its primary, it's the Oxford English.
Ooh, nice.
And typically if I do Google a definition, or one of my students does,
yeah,
it's OED that's shown as the source. So what's happened there? I don't know who this dictionary.com dude is.
Right.
But we do know who the OED is.
Right.
There is, and with it coming online, and available as a resource, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so, I have a set of 1986 Encyclopedia Britannicas on my shelf at school.
Right.
My students would not touch those with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
But they have a fascination with the fact that often when they go looking for good research,
yeah,
and they pull it up and they see Britannica.com, is that anything like those books? So I said, well, it's updated.
Yeah.
Mine are old now.
Sure.
Most of it is still totally legit, especially in the history side of things. The sciences may be a little rough, but the geography hasn't changed too much, although...
Right.
The fall of communism kind of punched me in the nose there. Right.
But, well, when it comes to geography, I thought you might say a few inches per year.
Yeah. Right. wherever a clod of earth is taken. it's interesting the context of the mind, right? You and I were brought up on books.
Mm-hmm.
They're being brought up on screens,
mm-hmm.
and there are definite differences in that regard. Not all of which I'm going to say are, I mean, it's natural for one generation to decry the younger generation, but there are some latent, some built-in proclivities that will help them navigate the screen world that I'm just probably never going to have.
Good, dude. This conversation is kind of getting long already, but whatever. I'll just edit it. I think one thing that we can't afford to skip over is what you've just mentioned here, and that is, it is very easy to take the position of, listen, you corn-sarn kids, this screen is a powerful tool. If you will only learn to use it the way that I know how, because I was raised on a manual transmission, and so now driving an automatic transmission is easy, right? It's bad to get stuck in that way, right? Even though it's easy to, I think, move in that direction. So...
it's comfortable.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's comfortable. And it's very sort of self-satisfying in a certain way, right? To say, sure. I have control of this thing. So the question that I have is, what new skills are we going to need to develop to navigate this world? And I think also... What skills do our students do better than we do?
Right. Yep. I do think that the a major difference between the what I'll call the page and the screen is the ability to sift through a multiplicity of sources.
Okay.
Any search, I'm not going to limit it to Google.
Right.
But any good search on the internet brings you up thousands of possibilities. It's a truth that because of the time element, that you have the speed element, they usually don't go past the first page.
Yeah.
So there's a skill, dig deeper.
Yeah. Or search better.
Right. So, yes. So, my final paper sophomore year is a research paper.
Nice.
It's interesting that most senior writing in high schools, especially public schools, seems to be around the research paper.
Yeah.
Which I think is a much more fundamental skill and should be taught earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We do it in sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them that the art of research is the art of the question.
Yeah.
And that search engines as wonderful as they are with keywords and asterisks and ands and...
Yeah, Boolean language, Boolean language. It's called.
The well-defined, the well-crafted question gets you better results than anything else. So the skill I teach them is once they understand what they're to research,
yeah.
You know, breeds of rescue dogs in Norwegia or whatever. Norway, sorry.
It's fine.
Once they've got their search parameter, what it is they want to research, the job is what are the questions?
Yes.
Right?
Dude, and this is awesome.
Writing it down, nowadays, with the screen, of course, typing it in.
Sure.
And then copying and pasting that sucker right into the search window.
Yeah.
Gains you... And I've had students challenge me on this. I'm just going to put rescue dogs in. I said, okay.
Go for it.
Here's what I want to do. I'm going to split my 60-inch screen up there, and I want one of you to do my way.
Yeah.
And one of you to just do the keyword.
Yeah.
And then let's just see that first page of results.
Yeah.
And that's usually all it takes to convert them into question askers, because that's what it's working off of, everything you've put in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's sometimes when that well-stated question needs to be edited, so some extraneous things need to be taken.
Sure.
But I'd still put up the full question without any of the filler taken out.
Yeah.
Against a keyword search.
Right.
You're going to get more hits off of rescue dogs.
No kidding.
But most of them are going to be completely useless to the point of your paper.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that leads right into, I don't want to build on this too hard, but many would call it the skill of attention. I'm going to call it the skill of discernment,
yeah,
or concentration or focus or bulldoggedness.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to go off. And any research, even on paper, has its rabbit trails, some of which are the most marvelous experiences of scholarship.
No doubt. Bootling was one of mine, but go ahead, yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
Right, yeah.
But if the result of a fairly easy, quick search is these tens of thousands of possibilities,
yeah,
you must learn quickly,
yeah,
to reject the vast majority of them. Seek the gold among all the pyrite.
Mm-hmm.
And it can make much more discerning people of us.
Yeah,
is my point.
Yeah,
if all the library has is five books, and I've got to get a paper out of this, and I don't have time to travel to Dublin and use the Trinity College Library, as glorious as that would be, if I'm stuck with what I've got, I make the most of it, and often can't be as discerning because it's all I have.
Yeah.
But if the world is at my feet, mm-hmm, even if it's just the free stuff, I gotta develop this ability to say, no, not that. No, that's not as good as this one.
Yeah.
And filter.
Yeah. So back in the, let's see, it was about 2010, okay. I heard that my philosophy professor came in and said, that he was playing a game with his colleagues, my other professors, right? And so this was the theology college of the university where I went. And, okay, so we're interested. Okay, you know, you were playing a game, five card...
It, well, yeah.
No limit hold'em or what? Yeah. What are we talking here? Five card
Hangman?
Draw, right? Yeah. And what it turns out, what they were doing was trying to type something in. These very learned,
yes,
and very intelligent men were sitting around. And what they would have to do is they would have to name a concept or a phrase. Okay? So it couldn't be a 20-word question.
Right.
But name a concept or a phrase. And then explain it. And once your interlocutors were sufficiently sort of thrilled or sufficiently believing you, that you understood what the concept was, then you would type that phrase into Google. And whoever had the fewest hits won.
Hmm.
Right? And at the time, Dr. Manus was winning with I remember him saying, universal muriological summation, which I think ended up being something like the theory of everything, right? Just okay. Just the grand unification principle.
But it well, could we know be the something answer to that's 42.
Right, yeah, exactly. Thank you, Douglas Adams. But it was Dr. Bayer, the Hebrew professor, who won. He busted into the door and said, hey, I don't remember the phrase now, but this, whatever it is, right?
And was it fair if it's in Greek?
And no, it was an English phrase.
Okay, all right.
And so, but he used it to refer to some obscure Old Testament thing.
Yeah.
And he types it in, and there were 11.
Oh, I thought you were going to say zero.
11 hits on Google, right? And it's like
it didn't go to the bottom of the page.
It's amazing. So it's that sort of thing where they are mining the entirety of what Google has available.
Right.
Right. They're trying to come up with that sort of arcane knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's a good use of your time. I happen to think it is. That's just not what I'm saying. But it's a really interesting way to sort of expose a different way of thinking about this tool. That is, it's a tool.
Yeah. Well, and my last thought will be that right off of that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of opinion forming is selection of the best selection of what I have available.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So given what I know.
Yep.
This is the best explanation I have for X.
Yep.
The screen, and behind it the internet. We've kind of morphed into a discussion of the internet, but the children of the internet have to figure out how to deal with so many more choices and not falling into some sort of skepticism or cynicism or relativism or even agnosticism.
Right.
That says, there's just too many, I don't know.
Right.
There's a value in that humility as opposed to the guy who's read three books and knows it all.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
There's a value to that, but it's also it's a metaphysical danger.
Yes, because who are you going to turn over to then?
Right.
Right. If you say, I don't know, somebody please decide for me.
Right. Because part of what I'm saying is so much of what I'm seeing here sounds convincing.
Mm.
And it can't all be true.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the metaphysical dangers is that we do develop this relativity that says, well, it is all true.
Right.
Everybody's got their own opinion and it doesn't really matter and so on and so forth. But truth really does matter.
Yeah.
And we're using screens to find it. We're going to have to use screens carefully enough to find the truth and not just stuff.
Yeah. But
a hit is not truth. Yeah.